Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to Culture Binge, the Wisecrack podcast that's your trusted guide to the best and worst of the cultural zeitgeist. I'm Michael, joined as always by the man who won't support a local coffee shop if he can't pay in cryptocurrency, Alec, and a person who once matched on Tinder with a foreign head of state, but can't tell us who it is due to a gag order from the State Department, Serby. Alec and Serby, how are you both doing today?
Doing very well. How are you?
Oh, I'm just really thriving. You know, we're recording at a fun time. It's a little later in the day. Normally we record when I'm on post coffee number one. Now I'm mid coffee number two, so it's gonna get crazy.
It's also the coffee shakes.
Oh, I might. I very well might. So the audio might just sort of oscillate at one point when I start shaking. Before we get started, I just want to say one thing. It's a big day in the Wisecrack universe. We officially hit 3 million subscribers on YouTube today. So wanted to say thank you to the Culture Binge listeners, who I assume many of you are Wisecrack subscribers. It'd be weird if you weren't. You should be one if you're not. But it's a big day for us, so we just had to shout that out. And while I'm doing a little bit of numbers-based self-promotion and asking you to love us, please rate and review this podcast. Go on whatever app you use to listen to it. Give it as many stars as they will let you give it. That could be 5, 6, 7. I don't know. And like we always tell you, find a fun way to review us and let us know what we would be in a certain category. For example, if you wanted to do canned beverages, you could say Alec is like root beer because he has a sort of solid, sturdy timelessness. Serby is like Mountain Dew Code Red. She's hyped, a little weird, and is good with Taco Bell. And I don't know, maybe I'm Fresca. I don't know why I'd be Fresca. I just felt like saying Fresca, but I wanted to give you an example of how to do that.
Are you Faygo?
I don't know which one Faygo is.
It's the Michigan one. Juggalos drink it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Anything Juggalos drink, I'll drink. But, you know, go do that. It means a lot to us. But we have a lot to get into today. We'll have a very, very musky episode where we're going to do a lot of celebrity chat this time around. We'll get into some dating-related things. It's going to be a very good time. But to start off, like we always do, and you know, we'll see if Alec participates this time because he's been a little bit difficult at this part of the show. But we got slaps and chaps. So, Serby, let's start with you. Slaps and chaps. What are you digging? What are you not digging this week?
So, what chaps? I am a huge Formula One fan, and I wanted to go to the U.S. Grand Prix in October, but I was a little late in getting tickets, and now everything is super expensive, or all of the great turns are sold out, and I'm so bummed. So
will you only go if you get a good turn? Like, this isn't a thing where, like, you want to go no matter what. You need a good seat if you're going to enjoy this.
I mean, I would want a good turn, but like other, I mean, you can go, like you can, there are other places you can go and it is super fun, but I feel like if you're going to spend that much money, like I want to see something with like some great action. So yeah, I don't know. I might fly somewhere else to go see it. I'll see how things are looking. So yeah,
I vote do it. Like, it's been a wild year. We mostly, you know, you've been in that office. I've never seen you outside of that corner. So I think you deserve a trip. I'm sure our listeners do as well. So wait, was that a slap and a chap?
That was a chap. Okay. My slap is that most of my family is vaccinated now.
Yeah.
And I've had some of my relatives come into town, including my little baby cousin, who's 2. So it's been really fun to play in the mud and race and pick flowers and eat snacks and jump with her. I've missed her so much. So it's really, really nice to see her. And she calls me Subi. And she'll be like, Subi, Subi, come here. Subi, come here. So I'm really, really happy.
Wow. Shouts to vaccines. Shouts to little cousins. Shouts to playing in the mud. Alec, slaps and chaps for you.
On the topic of vaccines, I'm like 3 days from being post 2 weeks fully vaccinated.
Wow.
So whoa, just going to go and
look out, New York,
like every stranger. I'm not going to do that. But I would say my more specific slaps is Pokemon Snap. It's so good. Just being sitting around taking photos of Pokemon is it's a joy.
And then are you still abstaining from chaps?
I'm still abstaining from chats.
Okay, we just wanted to be sure. I don't want to, you know, and it's at the point where do I find it annoying? Yes, but do I respect your conviction? Absolutely. I respect conviction more than anything else. So good on you. Yeah. My slaps and chaps, simple one for slaps. For the first time ever last night, I made homemade hummus. Really enjoyed it. And my thought was just like, why have I not been doing this for years?
It's so expensive to buy and so cheap to make and so
easy. And then you make it, and I was in bed last night already dreaming of iterations of ways the next time around to make it more fun. I'm about to have leftovers for lunch as soon as we're done with this, so this might be a very short episode because I just want to get to that. But so that's my slap. My chaps, let me say this at the outset. I'm normally not someone who cares about celebrity news, celebrity gossip, divorce, marriage, death, whatever. Don't care. Yesterday, though, there was some sad celebrity news that truly made me feel bad. And it was that John Mulaney is getting divorced from his wife. And it made me feel really sad. He's had a rough run recently. He was in rehab for addiction issues, and now he's getting divorced. And it just made me feel sad. So it's also a chat because, you know, I'm in a relationship that's similar to the one that John Mulaney and his wife had demographically. So they made me believe that that sort of love was possible. And now I'm concerned. So I might call my wedding off.
Wow.
I know it's a lot there.
Who is John Mulaney?
A comedian.
I thought you were going to say at Chaps that Melinda Gates divorced Bill Gates for hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein. And I was like, what is wrong with you? What's going on, Burns?
Yeah, that Chaps. You know what? Like, go down with your friend. Don't be a snitch. So what if he hung with Epstein? No. That's an objectively bad one. Now, like I said before, we have a lot to get into today. But before we do, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor this week, which is the NordVPN. Do y'all know what a VPN is? Do I need to educate you? Like, just let me know off the rip how much I need to tell you.
It's
listen.
They don't know. I don't think they know.
Viewers who don't know.
Okay, great. Well, and I'm just letting everyone know they have no idea. I always have to teach them tech stuff. So a VPN is a virtual private network. Now, this is something that protects your internet connection and privacy online. And privacy online is something we are all worried about. You might be looking at sketchy stuff, so you're worried about privacy. You might not be, and you're just into privacy. This matters. And the VPN creates an encrypted tunnel for your data, protects your online identity, it hides your IP address, and allows you to use public Wi-Fi hotspots safely. I think a lot of people are getting back out in the world. They're sitting at Starbucks for 5 hours nursing one drink, and they're going to use that Wi-Fi there. Do you really want to be sharing Wi-Fi with everyone in there? It's like a public pool. You don't know who's peeing in it, and Wi-Fi is the same way. That analogy might not hold. Now, if you don't already use a VPN, I'm going to tell you some reasons why you might want to use one. One, public Wi-Fi, like we already said. If you're on the public Wi-Fi hotspot, people can get in there. They can get your data. They can see what you're doing. You don't want that. You might need to master your location. Maybe you work in different countries. You travel a lot. Maybe it's as simple as you're out of town for work and you still want to watch your favorite shows. But when you are in, I don't know, Germany, it won't let you log into American Hulu or something like that. Someone used to live overseas, I would do this. I like it a lot. Also, if you're a gamer, who isn't, right? And if you like gaming online, there's stuff like DDoS attacks, there's bandwidth throttling, there's content restrictions. You use your VPN and you don't have to worry about it. So with NordVPN, you get all this and more. You're not going to miss your favorite content. You can change your virtual location with a click. You can find streaming platforms at a lower price, and you can choose 400 plus servers in 59 countries. I can't even name 59 countries. And you're getting good speed. You're connecting with one click. So what you can do right now is go to nordvpn.com/culturebinge, nordvpn.com/culturebinge, or use code culturebinge without a space. So just culturebinge, not culturebinge, culturebinge without a space. And you can get a 2-year plan plus one additional month for free. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/culturebinge. The code is culturebinge. Check it out. If you're not already using a VPN, you probably should. I think there's a lot of good uses for one. And even if you don't think of one right now, you can get it. And then you can go on Netflix, Hulu, whatever, in every single country and see what they have. It's a fun way to travel the world without using a passport. So there you go. Now, speaking of someone who probably uses a VPN, I assume he does, probably invented his own VPN, probably has some weird investment in a VPN that routes itself off a satellite in Mars and under a tunnel in Las Vegas, Elon Musk. He's been in the news a lot this week. We'll talk about a couple of the different ways he's infiltrated himself into our life. But Alec, you're going to talk to us about Elon Musk's relationship with memes.
Yeah. So there was an... I've been following mostly mockingly Elon Musk for a while now, but there was a pretty good article in the New York Times by Taylor Renz, who writes all of the interesting things about the internet that come out, or at least like 80% of them. Headline is Elon Musk meme lord or meme lifter. The whole, I guess, debate, controversy, whatever you want to call it, is Elon Musk promotes his public image on Twitter via the internet by posting a lot of dank memes. I'm not a monster. I understand that some of the memes are in fact dank. I'm not going to say that every meme he posts is bad. I'm not, you know, some kind of ideologue. However, there's a lot of controversy because he is stealing memes, not giving credit for them. This has, there's two sorts of precedent. One is it's the internet and nobody ever gets credits for memes and everyone just steals everything and intellectual property is bad. 100% on board with that, in a sense. But the other example is an account like Fuck Jerry, a popular Instagram account, was, you know, doing tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in like ads for their sponsored content. But they, you know, got all their traffic by stealing memes from smaller creators. So here is just an excerpt from the New York Times article. Quote, "Who controls the memes controls the universe," Mr. Musk tweeted last summer. He has called the visual jokes modern art and shares them regularly on Twitter, where he has more than 52 million followers. Mr. Musk doesn't make memes himself. Instead, he finds them online and has others send him their favorites. Sometimes he reposts his favorites without citing their origins. This practice isn't unusual. Many people on the internet share other people's memes without giving the creators credit, in part because credit can be hard to discern. Memes rely on reinterpretations of joke formats, and it's not always clear where they begin. A lot of this, I think, is certainly coming on for Musk in the way that he uses platform A. He's like one of the richest people on earth, but here's how the article continues. It may grate more for the simple fact that Mr. Musk, who this year was briefly the richest man on earth according to Bloomberg Billionaires Index, has used Twitter to bolster his persona and promote cryptocurrencies and stocks, including his own. Jamie Trufin, who runs a meme account called Dogecoin Daddy, said he was disappointed when Mr. Musk posted one of his Doge memes in March without credit. Quote, "It kind of kills your vibe," Mr. Trufin, 24, damn, said. "You work so hard on making all these memes. I could have gotten a couple hundred followers from that and would have made the community thicker and happier. He got us all excited for Dogecoin, but him ripping off meme pages and not giving them credit kind of kills the fun." And then in parentheses, "The price of Dogecoin, a cryptocurrency, has continued to rise, thanks in part to Mr. Musk's tweets about it. And then it crashed when he was on SNL." That was fun. I think there's two interesting questions here. Choose your own adventure. One is kind of like the question about intellectual property and memes. I'm not sympathetic to accounts like Fuck Jerry stealing memes to make lots of money off of them. At the same time, I'm just like, do memes need to be a form of art that need to be compensated, or a thing that like you can be stoned at 2 a.m. and make? And it just belongs to the commons. So that's prong one. And prong two is like, what does it mean for Elon Musk to use memes as a way to promote his public image? Other billionaires have other ways of promoting their public image. Bill Gates, after the world hated him after an antitrust case, turned to philanthropy. And then he started hanging out with Jeffrey Epstein. Anyway, Elon Musk does some charity things, et cetera, but you know, I think most people love him as a person and a personality and will follow him and argue with people on the strangers on the internet because he's a dank meme lord, and that makes them feel like he's their friend.
I mean, I'll say this really quick. I think there's two ways I can think of to look at the meme lord. One way that, and this is the more negative way to look at the meme lord, is they're like the guy at the party who like quotes Wedding Crashers or Step Brothers and thinks that they are funny because they can do that, or Family Guy, right? I don't like that person. If you're that person, do better. But so, and no one likes that guy because they are presenting comedic ideas or anecdotes created by someone else as their own for the sake of clout, making friends, being loved, having people find them funny. The other way to look at it, though, is a good DJ will often present you with songs they did not create, but part of what makes them talented is their commitment to digging through the crates to find unheard of songs that you might not have heard. So even if they didn't write the song, I would still give credit to a DJ if they play some like Brazilian funk song from 1973, 1,000 copies of it were pressed or something like that. So I think there's like two ways to look at it that way. I tend with this to veer towards the first one, the guy that wants to sound funny, even though he's not. And I think something that bugs me about it is like, if a DJ was doing that, they'd probably share what it was with you, or if they wouldn't, it'd be because they put in the effort to find it, like if they were digging through record crates in another country. But it doesn't take effort to find these memes. They're largely being sent to Musk. And I think, you know, the one person you said who has the Doge Daddy or whatever account or whatever you said it was, what it just makes me think of is like, why couldn't he just give people credit? Like, yeah. I don't know. I have a thing, like if I have a friend that has 75 Twitter followers and they say something very funny, I'm not liking, baby. I'm retweeting. Because you got to spread the love and you got to let people see who said the funny or witty thing. And I would feel a lot different about this. And this is where Fuck Jerry was so bad. And shouts to Meg Wright at Vulture, who did a really good takedown of Fuck Jerry called Fuck Jerry last year. but just give credit. I just don't get it. Like if someone sends you the thing, tag them. If they post it on their account, retweet their thing. This guy has enough going on in his life. Does he need credit for memes too?
This feels very like on brand for Elon Musk. Like, from what I know of him, he just seems like the kind of guy that would do it. And, like, he seems like the kind of guy that would, like, yeah. And, like, also, like, if, like, you know how there's, like, the watermark or something? He strikes me as the type of dude who would, like, go in and, like, take 5 minutes out of his day to, like, Photoshop the watermark out.
Yeah.
Because he's that small of a person.
Whoa.
That, like, he can't give credit to others or uplift others. And that's the thing. I feel like when you have a role, like if you're a well-known person or a celebrity or whoever, you should be aware of how much power your words have, how much power your actions have. And it's like Burns said, like, you already have enough going on. Like, do you really need to steal the meme? Like, is that really the thing that you're going to go to bed tonight and be like, fuck yes. Like, everybody thinks I did that.
Yeah, it is very like Tony Stark-ish. Not that he's in any way as talented, charming, whatever. But in the movie Spider-Man Far From Home, the bad guy Mysterio, turns out that they're just like disgruntled Stark Industries employees who are pissed that all their hard work was always being presented as Tony Stark's and he got credit for it. And if like for Elon Musk, like there's so many things that he is the face of and gets credit for, but like he doesn't make the memes. He doesn't build the space rockets. He's not flying those things. Like he just someone who seems to want credit for all of these things. And like if you fund stuff, that's cool, right? But I don't know. Like why does he need everything? What happened to him? Why is he like this? You know? Why?
Because he lacks self-esteem. He lacks confidence and he has a deeply rooted sense, lack of self.
Wow.
That is what's going on.
Wow. Elon, if you're listening, we're here for you and we want to help.
I don't.
Elon, if you're here and you're listening, we're probably not here for you and we're likely not helping.
Listen, Elon, I'll work in your dad's emerald mines without any credit for hours until I die of emerald lung. That's not a thing. I'll do it. Just for those RGB light car tunnels that you can drive through.
Yeah. But I do his think like, dad has oh yeah, we can go to his dad. Let's do that.
His dad has an emerald mine.
He's from South Africa and his family owns like a mining company in apartheid era Africa. I mean, they probably still own it, but you know, his familial wealth comes from there. And you know, he like came to Canada without any money in his pocket or some shit like that. But I don't believe any of it.
Because it wasn't in his pocket. It was shipped in crates and smuggled into the country.
It was laundered into his private school education, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I guess this
does... He's surrounded by great examples then.
Yeah. Really great
role models in his life.
And his mom was a model, right?
I don't know.
That has to be confusing. I don't know. But I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole of thought. But I mean, like, this, I don't know. This just raises a lot of questions on, like, the ownership of content in the contemporary internet age and the era of memification. And is it like, is it cool to have your meme spread around? I think a lot of memes, the thing that is beautiful about them is their anonymity and the way in which people create like memes, largely image-based memes to put out there just to be kind of chaotic and fun. And I imagine a lot of people who make those aren't maybe looking for like credit or gainful employment off of that. So it's a weird balance between this thing that's beautiful because of its anonymity and on the other side of it, people using that to get clout and credit for themselves. Like, would we be mad? I don't know. Do we think there's a large distinction between Elon Musk doing that with 52 million followers and someone with 52 followers doing this?
Yeah. It's a power thing, but it's also just like, you know, when if Bill Gates goes shoplifting, you're like, what the fuck? You don't need to do this. But like, if some random person with no money, you're like, okay, I could forgive that.
Yeah.
I disagree, respectfully disagree. I think that it's the intent. Like, I can't get over, like, the motivation behind it. I still think it's shitty. Like, whether you have 52 million followers mm-hmm. or 52, like, you're still not doing a, you're still making a bad choice.
Yeah.
Like, you go to bed, are you proud of yourself there?
Yeah. I mean, and this will, I'll say this and I'll pause because I don't want to jump into our next topic right away. But, you know, this also comes down to the fact that, like, why do businessmen, inventors, technologists, why do they also need to be perceived as funny? You know, like, why can't you just do one thing? I think, like, you know, Jamie Dimon, the sociopath that runs Chase Bank, he doesn't care if you think he's funny, and he's not trying to also be considered like a funny, cool guy. He's just like counting money and writing legislation and taking his helicopter to lunch. There's a certain phenomenon amongst, you know, a Musk arid person where they want to be all the things. I guess a version of that from the previous generation is like Bill Gates can't just be a tech guy. He also has to be a philanthropist. He also has to speak on, you know, vaccinations when he has no formal medical training. I think Alec will correct me if I'm wrong there.
It's true.
And at least there he's trying to like do something helpful, but there's something about the current era of people where like every rich, successful person who's prominent in the media wants to be funny, wants to be looked at as a humorous person. And I don't know where that comes from or what the root of that is, but it sucks. And it's bad.
So from my very limited understanding of psychology, and I know that we have psychology experts who listen in because they've written in before, so please chime in. I think it's something to do with, like, once you've reached, like, once you've maxed out on one aspect of your life, like fame or wealth mm-hmm. or whatever, you keep looking for the next thing. So what's next? Like, he wants to be funny. What's next after he's funny? Then is he going to get into philanthropy? Is he going to do something else? So it's always like the next best thing because mm-hmm. you've already accomplished one thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar with like Jeff Bezos and his rockets or Ashton Kutcher and his investment firm.
Yeah. Or just like every narcissistic CEO wants like a book written about them, but obviously publishers don't care. So there's a cottage industry of like ghost writers and publishing companies that will publish CEOs' narcissism books.
Yeah. But and I think the interesting thing with something like comedy or let's say even like music or whatever is like you can't purchase creativity the way you can purchase other things. So Jeff Bezos doesn't have to know anything about rocket science and he can pay a bunch of money and start a rocket company. You know, for many things, let's say I want to be a plane collector. All I need is money. I can start collecting planes, or I want to sponsor an F1 team and introduce the drivers to Serbia because that's the kind of guy I am. I can do that with money, but like you can't buy it's this. It makes me think of like James Dolan, the guy that owns the New York Knicks. And I think the Rangers and he's a piece of shit. He has this like horrible band and he's like the front man of his band. But because he's rich, he like pays to get shows for his band and they suck because you can't, no amount of money can make you good at music. No amount of money can make you a funny person or buy you a sense of humor. And it seems like it's this like stumbling block where the rich are just like, the money has bought me everything else I want in life. It's bought me love and spaceships and cars and whatever. Why can't it also buy me humor or creativity?
Can also buy you an F1 team so that your son can drive for it.
Yeah.
That sounds rad.
I wouldn't want my son to do that, though. It sounds really dangerous. I would love my son more than that. That's the sort of dad I am.
Yeah. Same. I mean, talking about not being able to buy talent, we want to talk about SNL? What's going on with that?
Yeah. So before we talk about SNL, quick thing for anyone who's on the stream right now. Early on in the show, I did let you know that we had 3 million followers on Wisecrack. It was a big day for us. The story has turned. We're now under 3 million because a bunch of people unsubscribed. So, you know, if you're watching the stream and you are not a Wisecrack subscriber, please go do that on YouTube or tell your relatives to do it or something like that. You know, it's funny. I get that y'all think you're being funny out there, but it hurts us. It hurts us deeply. So, and that's
funny.
It is kind of funny, but it's horrible. But speaking of people trying to, you know, be funny and buy their way into humor, We're still talking about Musk. Elon Musk went on SNL and was the host this week. Now, Elon Musk announcing that he was, or it being announced that he was going to host SNL was probably one of the most contentious and controversial hosting gigs since Trump in 2015. A lot of people weren't excited. The response amongst the cast and the writers of SNL was contentious right off the bat. Bowen Yang Instagrammed some stuff in his stories, throwing a little shade at Daddy Musk. A.D. Bryant, as soon as it was announced, immediately reposted a bunch of Bernie Sanders Twitter screenshots of him talking about how billionaires are bad. And Andrew Dismuke said the only CEO he wants to work with is Sherry O'Terry, spelled in such a way that the CEO of her name were there. Notably, A.D. Bryant and Andrew Dismuke did not really show up in sketches this week on the show. They were in the opening number they did where there was moms. So there was some contention on the staff there. Clearly, it was a ratings grab. And along with Musk being a non-performer host, it was the first time ever that SNL streamed live on YouTube, so people around the world could watch it. Now, to be very crass, I don't know, did either of y'all watch any of the clips or see any of the Musk on SNL?
I watched two of the clips. And for context, I haven't liked SNL in a very long time. I watched a lot when I was like 13. And so I thought they were very bad, but I don't know if they were like as bad as normal or just worse because of Elon Musk. I honestly don't know.
Yeah. So I'm someone who's, you know, semi-regularly watched SNL for the past, you know, 25 years or whatever. I think the Trump years were really, really bad. I watched very limited stuff. This year's had some good moments. I would say most episodes have a couple sketches where I felt like, wow, that's actually kind of funny. And the reason many of the sketches recently have been funny is because they haven't been doing just like current event politics stuff, which is kind of a bummer. They've leaned into just some goofy, weird stuff. But something you see on SNL is often you'll have a famous actor who host. And you think this is going to rip. But it sucks because even some of these famous actors have weird comedic timing and struggle to perform in sketch comedy. And Elon Musk is someone who is not a performer, like we just talked about before, isn't funny. And it was pretty brutal to watch, I felt like. They sort of placed him in sketches, gave him a few weird lines. They actually made me feel bad for him a few times because they had him doing like voices and characters. And I'm like, that's kind of messed up. That like, you know, we'd expect him to do that. And while he was on there, he did something very musky, which is he tanked the price of Dogecoin for a bit and caused Robinhood to pause all crypto order updates because on a weekend update bit, he went on and described Dogecoin as a hustle, just another hustle. And immediately it lost money for his thing. Now, my kind of cynical take here is that really the upside for SNL is it causes a lot of gets them a lot of press and causes a lot of hate watching. Because for better or worse, when someone everyone's mad at host, more people watch because they want to hate watch the thing. So SNL knew they were going to win either way from a ratings perspective. Yeah. What I would say Musk did is he laundered his bad personality. I think it was a way for him to get on TV, look kind of like cute, funny, in on the joke, and make himself come off as likable. Now, I didn't find him likable, but there was a thing. It was an interview with Kara Swisher and someone else in New York Magazine today that argued that like it was a good look for him overall because it made him look less like a Lex Luthor type and more like just a funny, goofy guy. But I think like this taps into some other things with SNL in general. Like, why do we have a non-performer as a host? And it's odd that next week the host is Keegan-Michael Key, who we, you know, from Key and Peele, one of the best sketch comedians of the past 20, 30 years. So it seems like a hell of an overcorrect right there. But I imagine next week when we see Keegan-Michael Key on, it's going to seem awesome because we're going to have an actual competent comedic performer there. But having them there didn't do a lot. It didn't make the sketches better. It didn't make the performances better. Worst case scenario, it made me feel kind of bad for him. And it does seem, and there was a great piece in the Ringer about this that came out yesterday. It seems like SNL is having a bit of a post-Trump era identity crisis because they spent the past 4 years putting on the Alec Baldwin show featuring the SNL players. And now they kind of have to figure out what they're doing. And I think it's always interesting to remember that when SNL first started, and it's so hard to get this now, it was truly seen as edgy. It was a critical show that tried to speak truth to power, had a messiness to it. The writers were getting blitzed on cocaine before showtime, not to say that that's good or cool. And now it's become something that doesn't feel that edgy. It doesn't feel that avant-garde or absurd. And having someone like Musk on seems like they're trying to appease a certain type of audience, which kind of makes me just think, like, you know, with Lorne Michaels, the longtime producer of SNL, retiring soon, like, is it time for SNL to just die? Or like to be mercy killed? So I guess that, you know, the kind of two things I'm curious to hear y'all's thoughts about are, you know, in general, why does someone like Elon Musk host SNL? Is there anything to that? Is there any value in that? And does this say anything larger about the future of a show like SNL and our cultural desire for something like an SNL these days?
I think Elon Musk wanted to host SNL for the reasons we discussed in the previous topic. I mean, he already has fame and wealth. He wants, like, to be a celebrity and to be cool and be in on the joke. I think that SNL is not funny. I don't watch it. If it's on, I will actively walk away from the television.
Wow. You won't even turn it off. You just walk away and go to the other room.
Yeah, if somebody's watching it and I'm, like, in the area, I'll just walk away. I think some things are funny, but I don't know. The humor always just feels a little forced to me. I liked it maybe like 15 years ago when it seemed kind of fun and they would do like fun sketches, but now it just feels really uncomfortable. You had another question that I don't remember.
Well, let me follow up with this, Serby. Do you think that SNL is failing because now like humor is so specific? I guess to touch back on the meme thing, that nowadays like so many things that people find funny are so specific to their interest, their internet subculture, whatever, that we don't have like a general sense of humor anymore.
That's interesting. And I think that there's some truth to that, because when you watch old films, like the humor is very general, and yeah, Everybody thought that they were hilarious and so great. So I do think that there is some truth to that. But I also think that what made SNL funny is what you referenced earlier, that it was edgy and they did like push boundaries and say uncomfortable things. And now I don't see that. It just sort of seems kind of stupid.
Yeah. And Alec, I want to hear what you think before that. Jack Long in the chat asked thoughts on him coming out as someone with Asperger's. Interesting thing is he noted that in his monologue. But in fact, Dan Aykroyd, early cast member of SNL, is on the autism spectrum and has been notable about that. So it was weird that he tried to claim that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very weird to claim that. And also, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the preferred nomenclature these days is on the autism spectrum and not using the term Asperger's. I don't know if that's the case.
This is a small sample. People I know who were diagnosed with Asperger syndrome like the label, but also I think there's a rift in the community, and I'm not taking sides, but I do know people on the autism spectrum who like the term Asperger's, self-identify, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I just don't want anyone to be mad at me because I'm fragile. So that was an interesting thing as well, that he made that claim and no one was like, actually, Dan Aykroyd, one of the people who was the first cast members on the show, but whatever. Alec, what are your thoughts on this?
I having friends who, you know, have Asperger's, I just imagine them like being like, oh, fuck, like he's making a bad name. Not that obviously on Musk's representative. I don't know. I don't have a ton of thoughts on it other than just like, you know, the dude's doing a PR thing, and I think it's like all part of that, which isn't to say that like successful, cool people telling the world that they have Asperger's can't be important. There's a great YouTube creator, Kyle Hill, I think, who just like made a great video about him being a science commuter and having Asperger's, et cetera, et cetera.
General thoughts on Musk on SNL as well?
Oh, well, okay. So I watched the Wario sketch and the Gen Z hospital one, and they were so painfully unfunny. And also, like, I really had the feeling on, like, the Wario court one that, like, oh, this is something that, like, the shitty, like, my high school would have put on. Or, like, when I go to, like, an improv show and I hate every second of it, like, this is what that's like. And so I was honestly, like, flummoxed. I was just like, how is this the thing? I wonder if SNL's problem is it's probably ended up in a point where it's so big as to appeal to everyone. And kind of to your point, it's not that like it's certain niche interest or something like that, but you know, there are like maybe genres or styles of humor that sort of, you know, appeal to certain people. Like, you know, there's your sort of like There's the Bo Burnhams of the world. There's like the Doomers of the world. There's the, I like watching like, God, what's her name? Kylie on TikTok. She'll do like the Kylie Broughton.
Oh, Kylie Brakeman. Yeah.
Brakeman.
So good.
Yeah. Like maybe that's your style. And, you know, SNL is this older format, not to say that sketch comedy can't be funny, but I think they're truly like, this is tuned in by millions of people every Saturday night who live in New York or Kansas. They're like different. So it kind of, they can't do any specific, like they can't be specific and good in a way that when they had no stakes in the game, like when they're early on and being super disruptive, because if they're super disruptive now, people be like, I don't get it. I hate this. And I think that's just a formula for bad, unfunny things.
Well, and the specificity thing makes me think as well of like, in at least in circles I talk to, one of the most successful sketch comedy products of the past few years has been Tim Robinson's I Think You Should Leave on Netflix. Interesting that he's someone who lasted a season or two on SNL, didn't do that well there. They weren't writing for him. And then he goes and makes his own thing that gets to be like his specific sense of humor, and it absolutely crushes and is probably the funniest sketch comedy thing in a while. So I do think there's something about being able to be more specific. I think as well, you talked about the Wario and the Gen Z sketch, both of which were objectively bad. I think that like, but I mean this from this perspective too, they're structurally bad sketches. And we actually have a video that came out a few years ago on Wisecrack, if any of y'all are interested, want to check it out, on Key and Peele, that actually outlines how Key and Peele write sketches that follow a very specific structure. Now it's not like you don't see that structure when you're watching the sketch because you're just laughing. But there's an art to it, and it seems like having someone like Musk on made it hard for them to do that. I would think of it like, you know, if you took someone who wasn't a professional basketball player and put them on the court with four other super good basketball players, they're still going to suck because that one person isn't going to understand the structural specifics of how you run a basketball offense or, you know, insert whatever sport or game or whatever here. So it just seems like there's no way to make that work.
Is it also possible that maybe the show doesn't attract the caliber of writers that it used to in the past?
So sadly, I know for a fact that's not true. It's
oh, really?
It's super prestigious, right?
Some of the funniest people that are working, some you know, I've had some friends who have been on that show before, not to be like whatever.
SNL writers.
Yeah. But it is like, it's like a hugely prestigious thing. And the thing is too, like there's not a lot of jobs writing sketch comedy at any given time. Like at any given time on planet Earth, there's maybe like 30 to 40 jobs writing sketch comedy. The problem is you show up there and there's a lot of constraining factors, including sometimes you show up and they're like, hey guys, we got to do a Burger King sketch this week because they're paying us money. So
awesome.
So that's the thing with SNL that's rough, because it's not a lack of talent. And whenever you see SNL writers and performers do their own thing, normally that's when people are like, holy shit, they're good. Not SNL itself. And that's kind of sad. And it always makes you wonder, like, I always think if you just for 1 week were like, hey y'all, do what you want to do. Like if Lorne Michaels was just like in a coma and came out of it or something. But yeah.
Maybe they should rebrand. They need to like maybe make it, maybe they need a rebrand. Or maybe all of these great writers should go on and do their own thing.
Well, that's what they do. They get the writing credit SNL, and then they can talk to other places and say, hey, Comedy Central, want to give me a show? It'll actually be funny. Hey, Adult Swim, want to give me a show? I promise it won't be as bad as SNL.
But I think too, like, I think like comedy's in a similar place right now, and maybe I'll wind down on this, to where I feel like music was, let's call it, I don't know, I feel like in like my high school era, I'm not going to say what year that is, I'm between the ages of 17 and 52, figure it out, but where there was a point where I feel like, you know, popular music got so, let's call it corporate or mainstream, everyone was wondering like, is there space for indie music or experimental music or whatever? We're at a place now where a lot of popular music is kind of cool and weird, but I think with comedy, it's like, are there places that will pay people money to do interesting, weird, and creative things, or is it going to be on TikTok and YouTube and smaller things where we have to seek out more creative, independent voices in that world? And I think SNL is sort of a thing that's gone all the way with that. Any other thoughts on this as we wind down from our big block of Musk?
That's it for me. There are some comments, donations I want to shout out. Snooch Boochum's Asperger's is antiquated nomenclature. We are autistic. I was diagnosed at 5 as an Aspie, and I don't idea as that. Thank you for the perspective.
Thank you.
Also, Philip, this is about Elon Musk, obviously. We treat celebrities like superheroes perceptually. It's all about keeping fake image in the mind of the public as marketing tool. And then the classic Dude Abides. This is going way back to the beginning of the episode. Sorry, dude, that I couldn't respond earlier. Serbian Joy should play Pokemon Snap while reviewing cookies and fries. Back to work after 2 week shutdown and making good money.
Yes. Yay. Get that money. And if you are ordering pizzas in Dude Abides region, I guess I'm not going to dox him. Give him money. Tip 500%. Do the math. Open up your calculator app. Take whatever you got. Multiply it by 500. Give him that money.
Yeah.
I think that's reasonable. Also, fries are so good. And I'll say that over the weekend, I had 2 different instances where I had excellent fries. I mean, top-notch fries.
Really? Where?
One was at a restaurant in Los Alamos, California called Bell's. I think they have the best fries I've had in my entire life. And then I had fries the day after at a place called Found Oyster in East Hollywood, California. And they served fries with a lobster roll. I didn't have a lobster roll. One of my dining companions did. And I had some of their fries. Just excellent. I love fries. I will also die one day because of fries because they're the worst thing for you. They're just the worst. There's no health value. All they do is gunk up your heart blood and stuff.
There were some doctors like the actual serving size of French fries should be 6. And I was like, fuck you, doctor.
Yeah. And it makes me think that God is real and he's just evil. Because why would he make it to where, like, I'm going to make this thing called a potato. Then I'm going to make this oil. And if you heat the oil and mix a potato with it, it reacts to make the highest concentration of evil saturated fats and everything to destroy your hearts. It's like, why you got to be like that, God?
Yeah.
Last year, after my breakup, the only thing I ate for 6 weeks was one container of fries from In-N-Out.
Not the same container. Every day you'd get a new one.
Every day I would get one container of fries, and that was all I would eat every day.
That's like that's self-harm too, because In-N-Out fries are terrible.
I mean, agree to disagree.
Yeah, I think you're an OG Californian. I don't want to dox your geographic history, but people that are deep Californians ride for In-N-Out fries, and I respect that. The same way I don't agree with Alec not doing Chaps, but I respect his commitment to it. Californians, they will just die on the hill of In-N-Out fries.
Are good. I've In-N-Out.
Burgers are good. Yeah. Fries are bad. Key is, I'll get to the next topic after this. If you're ever in Hollywood, California, there's an In-N-Out across from a Chick-fil-A. You do the move where you go through the In-N-Out drive-thru. You get your burgers, get into the next line, go to Chick-fil-A, get waffle fries, and then you get like a sweet tea lemonade mix there, and you're good to go. Both businesses that are problematic in different ways. We'll talk about that another time. Here's what I want to talk about right now. I want to talk about celebrities on dating apps. Serby, this is a thing that for a while I didn't believe was true when I would hear stories about celebrities on dating apps or a friend who was like, oh my God, I matched with Jonathan Taylor Thomas of Home Improvement fame on the dating app. No one ever said that to me. And I guess there's been some news this week about the goings on of A-list celebrities on dating apps like Raya. So what's the scoop?
Oh, this is so exciting. Okay. So I've mentioned Raya on the show before.
Get Serby on Raya. If you have a Raya pass, email it to us and we will give it to Serby. Alec and I will not use
Someone emailed us and I'm just outing Serby. She said it was, you know, like I didn't respond in a certain window of time and now I feel awkward responding. So I'm just letting you know that's why Serby didn't respond to you.
Email back and say it's totally cool and not weird.
His name is Alex, I think. So anyway, it's for those of you who don't know, it's an exclusive app that often attracts people who work in like the industry, like film or television or whatever. There are quite a few models, celebrities, influencers, and then there's also just regular people like me who just happen to get on the app. But I'm not on the app yet.
I don't think you're regular, but that's just me.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you. Speaking of sharing experiences on dating apps and Raya, several TikTok users have recently posted about their experiences with celebrities. One is a Naveen J, who is an influencer and a model, and she at one point matched with Ben Affleck, and she didn't believe that it was him. She thought it was a fake profile, so she unmatched him, and soon after he sent her a video in her Instagram DMs saying, Naveen, why did you unmatch me? It's me.
It's a good bit.
Normally that'd be super creepy, but I think it's okay in this context.
That's kind of funny.
Funny, yeah. So another woman, Kate Harrelson, said that she matched with Matthew Perry, and she saw the Naveen J video, and so she decided to post her video, which took place, I think, sometime last year. And the video is of a recording of Matthew Perry and her on a FaceTime call playing 20 questions. And there has been a mixed response to these revelations. So on one side, there are individuals who are calling Ben Affleck and Matthew Perry creepy, saying that as powerful, influential men, they shouldn't be sending videos and messages to young women. The woman who matched with Matthew Perry said, a lot of people were saying I'm a bully and mean for posting it. This and it made me feel kind of bad, but at the same time, I feel like a lot of guys in Hollywood are talking to all these young girls, and it's something that I think a lot of people should be aware of. She ended up removing the video because she said she felt a little bit bad about the hate that Matthew Perry was receiving, and she also called him a nice guy. However, on the other side, people are disturbed that Raya users are sharing private messages and recording calls and things like that. One writer from Refinery29, Lydia Wang, discussed whether it was appropriate to share who is on a dating app, saying, it's okay to send a funny screenshot around to your friends or expose somebody who sent a truly vile comment. But there's a thin line between enjoying the humor omnipresent on dating apps and outing a celebrity match for the sake of your own TikTok views. And the woman who matched with Ben Affleck said, I'm seeing a lot of comments calling him a creep, and I don't think that's fair. I wasn't making fun of him in the video. I was making fun of myself for thinking he was a catfish, and it was just supposed to be funny. And Chrissy Teigen said, I agree celebs shouldn't be making these creepy, desperate video replies on Raya, but it's tacky to release private messages. You're both wrong. Congrats.
Chrissy Teigen's where I get all my good Twitter takes.
Yeah. Chrissy Teigen, who for 2 weeks was like, I'm never coming on Twitter again. It's ruined my life. And then 2 weeks later, she was like, I need my juice.
She's back with a vengeance. So I have a lot of thoughts about this, but I want to hear from the two of you.
I think the Ben Affleck thing was just fun. Like, she wasn't trying to do it. When I saw that, I was like, this isn't a gotcha on Ben Affleck. It was just kind of funny. And, you know, I feel like when you're a celebrity, there's a certain expectation of like a loss of privacy. However, that gets really complicated in the maybe like private grounds of a dating app. And so I don't know the specifics of the Matthew Perry thing, but like, I think in general, it's like, listen, if you match with a celebrity and they're, again, being like a creep, abusive, et cetera, like, yeah, like, fuck that shit. But if they're just like awkward, weird, not funny, boring, maybe they talk about themselves, like, I don't know, like, I can't believe I'm siding with celebrities, but like, just let them have their privacy, you know?
Yeah.
And also in terms of like, isn't this app is literally for people who want to date the rich and famous, and you're gonna like, I feel like you're signing onto a kind of social contract of like, I can be discreet, and you're basically being like, no, I can't, right? Like, you know, if you're Bill Gates trying to get on the Raya scene, you don't want people talking about how small your dick might be or how many times you talk about Jeffrey Epstein. Like, you just want that discretion.
That's the third Epstein reference of this episode. Let's be honest here. You are not getting, I'm just backing away because I don't want to yell too loud. You're not getting on a Raya because like, oh, I just want to meet like a nice partner to settle down with and everyone there is just like down to earth and nice. No, fuck that. You're on that because you're chasing clout and it's fine. I get it. You know what I mean? At a certain age, if there was an app where I could have asked Keira Knightley out on a date, you know I would have. But it's you're clearly in it for one thing. You want to flirt with and maybe have consensual sex with a hot famous person or a non-hot famous person who's hot because of their fame or their wealth.
Yeah.
So like, don't get on here and act all messy. Two, you should be kicked off the platform if you're sharing screenshots. Like, it's, I hate that I'm signing with celebrities too, but like, Jesus Christ, like the whole point of something like Raya is like, hey, let's all act like we've been here before and like be cool with it. I think it's the same thing. Like if you're in a, you know, if you're in a city where a lot of celebrities live and you're out at a bar or restaurant and you see someone there, don't take a fucking picture. Just be cool. Everyone act cool. Let people cook. And then I think along with this, like with the dating apps, there are age settings that you have. If a man or a woman or whoever doesn't want to be approached by older men, they can literally set that up in their thing. So don't miss me with this sort of like how horrible that Matthew Perry or Ben Affleck, they matched because the settings had them in their age brackets. And I'm not going to infantilize women and say that a woman can't, as an adult, decide what age man she wants to date. Date a 105-year-old for all I care. But I just think the way this is getting framed in the media is so weird. Also, just don't snitch. I hate snitching. This is just snitch culture at its worst. And like Alex said, I feel sick to my stomach that I'm sticking up for. Ben Affleck, I don't feel that bad for sticking up for, but God, Matthew Perry. I'm sticking up for Matthew Perry. Chandler from Friends.
Bingling.
Oh, it feels gross.
Serby, what's your take?
Yeah.
I'm really disturbed by it. It's so disrespectful. I think that's what it is. It like, you're going on this app, you want to meet somebody, we're all adults, like, what's the big deal? Like, they're a celebrity. Who the fuck cares? Like, they're just another person. And maybe because, I mean, I love celebrity gossip, but I'm not super into, like, celebrities. Like, when I see a celebrity out, I'm just sort of like, oh, taller than I thought, or shorter than I thought.
Normally that one.
But, yeah, but nothing more than that. Or sometimes I'll look at their clothes just because I'm like, what kind of shoes do they wear? But I'm not the type to be like, holy shit, it is Ben Affleck. If it was like a Supreme Court justice or somebody, I'd be like, oh my God.
Sonia Sotomayor rolls by and you're just like, what?
Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, I love you. Can I please have a picture? Like I would lose my shit with certain people like that. But I think it's just disrespectful and it's unkind, and recording your FaceTime call and putting it up for people to laugh at. I mean, that's just gross to me. Like, how could you think that that would ever be okay? You did it for a specific reason so that you could show people that you matched with Matthew Perry. I just think that if you're that immature to do something like that, you're not mature enough to be in a relationship. To be in like a long-term meaningful relationship that requires discretion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think there is like an interesting conversation to have about like the age gap. And when I see older men who are like perpetually dating younger women, I'm like, that's kind of creepy. At the same time, like there are lots of non-creepy relationships of like younger people and older people. It just, people fall in love for a variety of reasons. But I think like to go on Raya, to be like, I want to fuck someone who's rich and or famous, and then be like, oh, but the power differential is not cool. Well, like, but you went on there and like, it's cool. Like if there are old dudes who prey on younger women, that's totally creepy. But at the same time, I would not be like, well, let me get on there to be preyed on by old dudes or women, you know, like whatever.
Yeah, it is complicated. And, you know, shouts to our producer, Joy. I'll clearly acknowledge grooming exists. It is a thing. And especially it happens in the industry. But that also, I don't know. I just have a complicated feeling about like, I feel like we can acknowledge that grooming exists. A lot of men, especially old Hollywood men, are creepy. But also that like, you know, if you're on one of these apps, they are for celebrities. You know, most of the guys on there are a certain age and you're putting certain age stuff on there. I think it's just weird to like, do that to people. And I think too, like, I think both of you made this point. If like Matthew Perry or Ben Affleck were being like abusive, shitty assholes, then you know what? Yeah. Put them on blast, ruin their shit. But if it's just like a sad man in Hollywood, I'm just going to assume Matthew Perry's sad. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say that. He's probably sad. And he's just like, let's play 20 questions. Like, I don't know. Like, unless the questions are like, let me see your birth certificate. Like, I don't know. I just think like, I don't know. It's just hard for me to think that like it's ever a good idea to rock that. And you just don't have to be on Raya. You don't have to be on Raya. You can do anything else. You don't have to go on there. And you are, and you're there, and it's clear that you're there for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. This whole thing is weird. And it's so gross to me that they're doing it to, I mean, not the Ben Affleck one was funny. I mean, that one made me laugh.
I truly think that's funny.
But the Matthew Perry one was just like, so you're just trying to jump in on this conversation and get some views and get your name out there.
Yeah. I don't know. I make
better choices in your life.
Make better choices. And I'll say this, and this is the most important point here. If you get Serbi on Raya, she is not messy like this. She is someone who will have respect. She will, let's say you're an F1 driver and you match and you message her. This is not someone who's screenshotting. This is not someone who's taking videos. This is someone who's like, I'm an adult. You're an adult. Let's talk about our shared interest and see where this can go.
Hopefully anonymous sex.
I didn't say that, but that someone said
it
that.
It can't be anonymous if they're famous. I mean, it could be anonymous for you. They're not going to remember who you are.
Well, I mean, if they don't want me to know, if they want me to pretend like I don't know that they are an F1 driver.
I feel like the whole point of Raya, though, is like, you know, and you're like confirmed to be who you are.
Yeah.
My thing will be like co-host podcast, Wisecrack, almost has
the F1 drivers will be like, we all listen to Culture Binge when we're racing. The pacing of the podcast replicates the feeling we have when we're on the track. Like, we win because of you. So I think that works. But of course, you know, like with all things, messy topic, a lot of takes. We would love to hear what y'all think. Any final thoughts, Serbi, Alec, on this one?
If you match with a celebrity, be an adult, be mature, be discreet.
Listen, best advice ever in life. If you had to put a gun to my head and say, give me one piece of advice that works in almost every situation, it'd be this. Act like you've been there before. Just do that.
Yes.
Act like you've been there before and things are going to go fine for you. It works in dating. It works in professional situations. I would say even in a hostage situation, if you act like you've been there before, you're not going to draw attention to yourself like the person who's crying. So, but I hope no one who listens to this podcast is ever in a hostage situation on either side of it. But if you haven't in a hostage situation, let us know. Or if you have thoughts on anything we've talked about today, we love hearing from you. It makes us real happy. So you can write us or you can call us. If you want to write us, culturebinge@wisecrack.co. That is culturebinge@wisecrack.co. No M. I guarantee you we get some fantastic emails where people put the M there and we never see them. So if you ever wondered, you know, why have we never read your email, check where you're sending it to. If you want to call us, you can call us at 213-534-8807. That is 213-534-8807. Just wanted to note, it is a voicemail system. We do not take turns answering that and talking to you live. That would be fun, but I don't want anyone to be disappointed if you don't hear one of our voices when you call. So once again, write and call us. I say this every time and I mean it. It means a lot to us. We love hearing from you. I get so much joy and pleasure out of reading everyone's emails, and just know that if we don't read them on air, probably because they're like long or we got a lot of them, but we like them. We appreciate them. Keep writing. Alec, did you call anything you wanted to talk about this week?
Yeah.
From the pile of emails.
We've got some great emails. This first one is from Squin, who says, "Hi, Culture Binge. Just listen to your conversation about the loss of culture during the pandemic and how streaming events of entertainment aren't an adequate replacement. My one recommendation to anyone that isn't yet comfortable mouth breathing with strangers at a crowded event yet, but may be comfortable having a close friend or two over, would be to invite a friend and watch a streaming event together. I recently watched a streamed concert from the Mountain Goats, and just having a friend physically same room to react along with me made such a difference in bringing a little of that live event feel." Yeah, you're vaccinated.
That's a great suggestion.
Yeah, get those friends over. I'm trying to get friends over to play Pokemon Snap with me, and they're like, dude, I want to go outside. I haven't been outside in a year. I'm like, fuck you. Come inside and play Pokemon Snap to pretend like you're outside taking photos of Pokemon.
No, that sounds really fun. I know early pandemic, the way I connected with my two best friends is we were watching live concert streams every Saturday, and we were all on like Hangouts together, but it wasn't the same. That's a great middle ground. Great advice. Everyone take it. Mm-hmm. There's tons of cool streaming events. Do a little Google and you'll find something you like.
Yeah. This next email is from Pedro. Hello, Culture Binge crew. How are you guys? Great. We were at a real high from 3 million subscribers, and now it's just come crashing down, but maybe we're back up there. Anyway, this is Pedro from Brazil, and I wanted to comment on an email from Craig you guys read on the May 1st episode. He mentioned how bad the pandemic was in Canada and how you guys talking about coming back to normal in life was too much for him to deal with. I absolutely don't mean to disrespect Craig's feelings on the matter, but I'd like to share my point of view that I believe other listeners may also have. Since the situation in Brazil is similarly dire, and ever in the news we only hear about tragedies, I actually find some relief in you discussing ways of returning to normal life, and the summer of chaos and such. It makes me hopeful for better days to come for all of us, so I'd like to hear more about it, even though I totally understand how some people would find this content distressing. God, Pedro, I don't know what to do now. You've really put me in a... I was going to say a Sophie's Choice. That seems inappropriate.
Wow.
So I work at a global organization, and I struggle with this as well because I talk to people from all over the world, and some people are fully vaccinated and others are saying that they likely won't be vaccinated until the end of next year. So from what I've seen, it's just more about being respectful when talking about it. So it's okay to say that you are getting vaccinated or you are fully vaccinated, but not being like just rubbing it in people's faces, I think.
Yeah. I think don't rub it in, and also appreciate the opportunity you have. If you live in a country right now that is vaccinating people, don't take that lightly. And I'm not here to shame anyone, but if you have access, this is a community health issue. So you can do a part, and this is going to sound corny, but it truly makes a global impact the more people get vaccinated in every country, because we live in a connected society where people are traveling and goods are shipping and all that. So, it's you're doing something good for people outside of your city and even your country if you go get your little shot.
Yeah. I'm getting my second dose today.
Congratulations. Fantastic. Have a fun tomorrow.
I'm nervous.
You should have... Wait. Tomorrow is Wednesday. So you'll get to, maybe take off of work Thursday. I got my second dose on Friday. I was sick Saturday. It was a waste of a perfectly good sick day. Anyway, the last thing from Pedro, though. It's his 18th birthday. He said next week, which I think might be this week. Happy birthday, Pedro.
Happy birthday, Pedro.
Happy birthday.
Let us know, Pedro, if there's anything you can do at 18 in Brazil you couldn't before. I would imagine that's probably a drinking age or something in Brazil. I don't know. Let us know if there's anything fun that happens there. But either way, 18's great.
If you want me to rob a pharmacy and then get some dried ice and then go to Brazil. No, I can't do that. I'm saying I would steal vaccines for Pedro and their friends.
Oh. Okay. Also, email culturebinge at wisecrack.co, subject line homemade vaccine. And I'll tell you some things.
Happy birthday, Pedro.
Happy birthday. That's awesome. 18. A lot ahead of you. A lot ahead of you, Pedro. I have so much stuff to come. It's going to be great.
Do we have time for one more email, Serby?
Let's just do it. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Last email is from Chris. Hey, everyone at Culture Binge. I'm Chris, and I want to talk about Michael's topic of meat. There are some environmentally conscious alternatives that are the wave of the future. I got two examples that I've seen in documentaries. The first alternative is meat grown in labs. Scientists have been able to use stem cells to create test tube meat, creating beef on a cellular level that doesn't need to raise a cow. This process has less impact on the environment than mainstream beef production, and consumers couldn't taste the difference. So in the future, look out for meat that has been grown in a lab. The second alternative is to not eat meat, instead start eating bugs. Crickets, I hear they're great. You might think I'm crazy, but hear me out. There are multitudes of insects that are completely edible and can be prepared in quite delicious ways. From crickets to mealworms, grasshoppers, and scorpions, all of them are edible. As for how to eat them, you can bake them, deep fry them, or dip them in chocolate. Raising colonies of insects for consumption takes less time, energy, and water than raising cattle. Also, I'm thoroughly convinced that anybody can smash down a pile of crickets to make into a hamburger. They're a good source of protein, and they would probably be more nutritious than anything you would find at a local Taco Bell. All right. Shots coming for us. So with that in mind, I propose a question to the three of you. Would you consider eating insects in some way, shape, or form? You just might like it. You never know until you try. since you like games like this, here's what the three of you could be if you were insects. Alec would be a dragonfly. Michael would be a dung beetle. And Serby would be a beautiful butterfly. I don't know. Is Serby a butterfly or is Serby the praying mantis that murders the partner after getting some?
Exactly.
Yeah, you're that.
That's what I understand,
Serby. I guess I'm a dung beetle because they kind of chill. And I don't know what their relationship to dung is, but I go a lot. I have a very fast digestive system. It's true. I mean, I'll say two things to that email though. One, I've eaten bugs 3 different times.
Really?
Every time I was like, oh, this is like pretty chill. I think I've had crickets and grasshoppers. Didn't mind it. It was a little bit of a weird head fuck.
In what scenario?
First.
Like in the United States, at a restaurant, abroad?
Two in the United States. There's a place, I think it was in LA. Yeah. A Oaxacan place had grasshoppers. What's the other one we said? I said it and I forgot it immediately.
Crickets, mealworms.
Crickets. I think I've had crickets at a Oaxacan spot. And then I had chocolate covered ants once years ago. But wasn't not into it. Question about lab grown meat though. Do you think it'd be possible to get a lab grown human hand that I could slap people across the face with? And it was like, I always had it on me. And if someone was pissing me off or said something I didn't like, I'd slap you with this fake hand. But then if you called the cops, I would be like, fingerprint it. See if it's me. And I could just slap whoever I wanted with a fake hand.
That's a great plan. I think you should really look into that. I support it. So, Serby.
Great. If you make fake hands, I'm going to use the corporate card. Let me know. You just heard Alec on air say that I'm allowed to do it. Serby.
I have a weird relationship with food. I don't even like eating normal food. So probably wouldn't eat bugs.
I don't think I would eat bugs. I feel like even when I ate meat, I was weirded out by most meat and not for any ethical reasons. I mean, maybe for ethical reasons. I just don't need to think about it because I think it's icky, which is not logical or rational or the right thing to do. But I'm just like, you know, I'm liking eating vegetables. Why go over into insect land? Maybe if I was eating a bunch of steaks every day, I would consider it. But yeah, I know. I think it's crickets are big in Cambodia where, they're a street food now, but originally because of a famine that was brought on both by a dictator and U.S. imperialism, they didn't have anything to eat, so they started frying crickets, and now you can just get them like popcorn, and I hear it's delicious.
Shouts to Henry Kissinger. Great. Yeah. I'll say this. There's a famous restaurant. It was ranked the number one restaurant in the world for a while called Noma in Copenhagen in Denmark, and a thing they were committed to is only using local ingredients. Well, locally, there was no lemons or limes. They figured out, and this is real, you can look it up, if they like scared ants, the ants would then taste acidic. It was something like that. So what they used in lieu of like lemon juice was like ant vinegar and stuff like that. And they found that ants were a replacement for that. And they used bugs.
How do you scare an ant? Blow on it?
I don't know. You can look into that. But also Noma and Rene Redzepi, the chef there, has famously done a lot of stuff with bugs and bug food and is advocated for that sort of thing. So worth looking into. I think that was all we got for emails, right? Okay.
I just want to do. Somebody wrote in asking for a feedback on their business idea. I can't remember the second one, but one of them was a vending machine. Go with that one, especially near like a school, college town, something like that.
There you go.
Intentionally vague. We don't want anyone to steal this fire idea. But I
Don't throw the idea away. Now, if you want to throw business ideas our way or Raya passes or send us memes that you think Elon Musk would like, you can do that on social media. So, Serby, how can someone kindly message you on Twitter?
You can tweet me at Suri Patel 22.
Alec, how could someone kind of aggressively slide into your mentions to make a point?
Oh, it's at Wisecrack Alec. You could tell me about all the bugs you've eaten. I don't know.
Great. I'm at Michael O'Burns. And you can do things like slide into the mentions to talk about me farting while filming videos, which someone did yesterday, which I found very funny.
What?
And I'm now going to ask if we can have a butt mic when we film so we can have a fart track. Real thing. Not me doing the butt mic thing, but someone brought that up. So hit us up, email us, call us. We'll be back in a couple weeks. In the meantime, once again, thank you so much And, you know, subscribe to the channel so we can get back to 3 million, because now we're down to 47 subscribers. It's gone really bad since this started. So we'll catch you all next time. Thanks so much. This has been Culture Binge.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.